Hey, Anna, I know we've been talking about Mars missions a lot, but did you know that NASA is trying to figure out what kind of crew would be best to send to Mars?
What kind of crew?
Yeah, because they have to travel through space.
Did you say astronauts?
Well, astronauts, true. But what what astronauts would be the best like makeup? What kind of groups of people would they want to put together in a rocket where they're 7 months going from Earth to Mars, 1 year on the planet, and 7 months to come back?
So what, all in one like mission?
You got to do it. That's the only way to do it. And so what kind of people would get along psychologically on a 2-year mission such as this in cramped quarters? So they've done some studies on this, and there are two trains of thought on this.
Okay.
One is that the crew should be consistent of completely made up of married couples.
Okay.
And the other train
What's
of
the
thought
other option?
Is that would be the worst possible crew you could ever have on a Mars mission.
Oh my gosh, that's an interesting idea.
Yes.
Wow, that's put a lot of pressure on your marriage.
Well, exactly, yes. Now, I don't want you to have to answer which one you think is best.
Because my husband does listen to the show.
Yes, he would listen. And so, obviously, married couples would be the best.
Absolutely. If there's one thing I'd like, it's to be with him in not as much as I, only as much as I am, but in a closed quarters, cramped quarters is what I was really, would really strengthen our relationship.
Yeah, for those 7 months and you can't leave outside. And you're you're like, honey, I got to go for a walk.
Need to cool off.
Wait, actually, you should go for the walk. Right. I'm staying here. This is my place.
That's right. This is ridiculous.
Outside. Go. From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, co-host of Stargazers on PBS, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. Dean's the astronomer, and I have lots of spacey questions. This is our one-year anniversary episode. And we're celebrating by welcoming Shankar Vedantam, science correspondent for NPR and host of the podcast Hidden Brain. I cannot wait. Dean, did you think we'd make it 1 year on this podcast?
No, I didn't think we'd make it 2 weeks on this podcast. But we're here. We
to
are
be that. Like I was thinking, like okay, I was actually that was a hypothetical or rhetorical question. And you're like, no, absolutely not.
No, now it's even better than I could have ever imagined. This is like, this is gold. This is gold. Every time we do one, it's gold.
That's right. 26 episodes or 27, 26,
26 down. Yep.
And you have not listened to a single one.
No. Oh, I listen to them.
I'm just kidding.
Well, I think listening to my own voice is tricky. I don't know.
Well,
sometimes.
You know, I'm just saying that's a lot of episodes. We've talked to some great people. Do you want to tell our listeners about how this got started?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Isn't it a good question?
It's not really your normal podcast situation.
It's
and in fact, for our listeners out there, this was not the original idea for the format of the show.
Give them a minute to let that sink in.
I know.
It's going to blow their minds.
Because it's so good now.
It's so good.
The idea that I could have thought of something different than what it is now would be ridiculous. But so I was thinking it would be cool to do a podcast, and just worked out that WVXU and Cincinnati Public Radio wanted to do a podcast. And so they approached me to do one. And so I thought, boy, I need a co-host. I can't do this all myself. And it's always good to have two people on a podcast. And so I thought the perfect co-host would be one of the weather people from one of the local TV stations. And think about that, weather and science and space together. Wouldn't that be awesome? And they said no. So
don't edit out that heavy sigh. That's on purpose. It's on purpose.
So then I had to go with plan B or C or D or I don't know how far down.
This is supposed to be flattering. This is supposed to be like, I'm scraping the bottom of the co-host barrel.
That's right. And so so then there you are in the office being like, oh, so you're making a podcast, huh? Oh, you can't find a co-host. Oh, that's too bad that they didn't want the
I think I
people.
Shared the idea that I didn't like the weather, even though it was a great idea. I was just like, that's dumb.
That is a dumb idea.
You know who's cool.
And then I was like, well, I guess we can have Anna do it. I mean, might as well have her. She's right here anyway.
I should have told this story.
All right, how would you tell
the
story?
No, it's too late. You've already like... Go ahead.
No, I thought of you right away too,
because right,
that's what we do at the office is we talk. You have these conversations about questions, and we drive the other staff members crazy. And it's true. So you were not Okay, you were plan B, but you weren't plan A, but you were plan B. So definitely a high B plus.
Oh, wow. Thanks for that. This is not how I saw this going. I thought this was going to be different, or I wouldn't have asked you.
I know. But it was worked out great because I knew it was going to work out because
you have
such good questions and you got like this, insight to it that, and plus you keep me grounded because sometimes I go off in tangents and outer space and you're like, well, wait. What? That doesn't mean anything. What are you talking about?
Yeah. And you're not as fun as I am. But wait, what?
That's right.
Is that
exactly.
Allowed?
So it worked out perfectly, I think.
Really.
No, more than that.
That's true.
So much more.
I mean, it's amazing that we've just made this just work so great. We've talked to so many exciting people.
Yes.
I'm going to move on from the story how it started.
That's right.
It's like, no, it was good. You're right. I'm thrilled that you let me be part of the show. It's an absolute delight. It's been really fun.
And now it's an equal partnership of, colleagues.
And people come up to us and they say they like the podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, I have more than once.
Yeah. And it's mostly because they like you. So that's what's really good. They're like, oh, Anna's the best. I was like, yeah, that's true. It's true.
No,
she's
that's
carrying
crazy.
The show.
That's right.
She's carrying the show. But ask her a kid question.
Ask her about Antares and watch her crumble.
That's right.
Yeah, that's
well,
fair.
So we've had all these great guests over.
So many good guests.
And so who stands out in your mind that you remember? Who's like your fave? Hmm.
Well, I feel like I should. I mean, there was many good guests.
Right.
I love Lauren Worley. Her insight about NASA and the movies was so fun.
Oh, yeah.
I really liked your buddy Ira Flato.
Yep.
That was really a good show. I mean, there's so many. I like all the NASA folks were interesting. But I have to say, this cannot go by without me mentioning your parents.
They were the
greatest.
So we should have them back again?
Absolutely.
All right.
In the studio. Yeah,
okay.
They can run and interview us.
There we go.
I don't know what's happening.
That would be perfect.
Who were your favorite? Now you have to say your parents too, but who was
my
your favorite?
My parents were my favorite.
That was fun. Come on.
Yeah, that was only mildly embarrassing.
Yeah,
they told some stories that I wanted to keep hidden.
So many good stories.
So I think, let's see, of course we talked to Beekman from Beekman's World. That was pretty exciting. That was like my childhood idol in some ways.
You were kind of geeking out about that.
Oh, yeah. So he was cool to talk to from Astronomy Magazine. Michael Bakich was really good because he was talking about the eclipse. Oh, remember the eclipse last year?
Back in the day, a year ago.
I know.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Pre-eclipse. And so he got us all super psyched about getting ready to see the eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got to talk to Scott Kelly, the astronaut that went up into space for an entire year. And we got to even meet him in person. That was really cool. So you think get my parents back on?
They were really fun.
We can do that. I don't know. I mean, who else? Who do we want to get on the show?
Well, I always mention, Leland Melvin. I feel
astronaut,
bad because Kevin's
astronaut.
Like, I'm working on it. Back off. But I also, that's our producer.
Yes.
I really want to talk to Mayim Bialik. I think she would be really interesting.
That
would be my Beekman is great, but she would I watched Blossom religiously. I wouldn't bring it up, but I would think about bringing it up. But she's somebody who is really cool in STEM and, of course, is on Big Bang Theory. So I would love to talk to her.
That would be pretty cool.
What about you? Who are you
I'd like to talk to Neil deGrasse Tyson, of course. I mean, he's like the best for this stuff. Bill Nye would be pretty cool to talk to.
Bill Nye would be cool.
And then there's so many other astronauts we want to Mae Jemison we want to talk to.
Oh my gosh, if you're listening, please come on the show.
I know.
You're
that would
greatest.
Be awesome if you came on. But there's so many other ones. So folks that are out there listening, if you have some ones you want to recommend for us to interview, because basically all we do is we call them up and just cold call them and they say yes because they
just hear Dean's voice and they're like, absolutely.
Sure,
whatever I can do for Stargazer would be great.
So, if there's anybody you can think of, we can have them on. That would be awesome. And we're going to try to get some other new topics for the year, too. We're going to try to get into star mythology.
Love it.
We're probably going to talk about black holes, dark matter,
comets,
aliens,
meteors.
Comets and meteors.
There's so many things in space.
I know.
To talk
it's going
to
be great. So definitely recommend some stuff to us and we'll put it on the show as soon as we can.
Can't wait.
So Anna and I are super excited to celebrate our one-year anniversary, and we're going to be talking to Shankar Vedantam from NPR. He's a science correspondent focusing on social science and human behavior. His podcast, Hidden Brain, proved so popular that it's now a weekly program heard on NPR stations around the country. Here in Cincinnati, it's on at 2 p.m. on Saturdays. Shankar, thanks so much for joining us today.
Happy to be with you, Dean and Anna.
Well, so I remember hearing your pieces on NPR, and I just thought they were the most fascinating social science stories. I thought it was such a kind of an odd thing to put on NPR, but I loved them. They were so great. And so how did this get turned into a podcast?
You know, I think I was surprised at sort of the reaction of many listeners, because we heard from a lot of people who had the same reaction as you did. I just thought that I was, you know, pursuing this geeky, nerdy thing of finding, you know, studies in obscure academic journals and putting them on NPR. But they really caught people's attention. We got a lot of feedback from listeners. And I think the feedback from our audience told us that there was something here, that there was a hunger for this kind of material out there. And we said, is there a way to build this out from longer than just, you know, 3.5-minute segments on Morning Edition to something that was a, you know, longer form journalism that explored different ideas? So the genesis of the podcast was really the success of the shorter form version of what I was doing on Morning Edition.
And how do you come up with your topics or kind of think through what you're going to discuss on the show?
Well, it comes from a variety of different ideas and sources, Anna. In many ways, I think it might help to sort of step back and think about the fundamental goal of what it is we're trying to do, which is we're trying to help people see their world in new and interesting ways. I've often taken great personal pleasure in having someone say, you know, here's the way you think about something, but if you turn the whole thing 30 degrees, it not only looks different, but it actually looks like a completely different problem. It looks like a completely different world. In some ways, this is actually what you get from being an astronaut, right? I mean, one of the great virtues of being out in space is that it actually gives you perspective on the world in which we live, the people who are non-astronauts. And when we see ourselves from a new perspective, it allows us to think about our worlds in new and interesting ways. So that's the, in some ways, the Uber idea that we're trying to aim for with every podcast episode, which is how do you get people to look at their daily lives and see that there is magic and wonder and curiosity and surprise in those lives? And the specific answer to your question is stories come to us from a variety of different sources. There's certainly, I read very widely in the academic literature, in the journals being published in, you know, psychology and sociology and anthropology and economics. And I get ideas from the work that's being published by scholars. We also pay very close attention to the news and say, is there a way to pivot off the news to connect the world of the expert to the world of what's actually happening around us? And then we also just look for really interesting stories. We look for stories about people who've done interesting things or have gone through interesting experiences. And we say, what can these stories reveal to us about the larger nature of what it is to be human? So it's really a combination of different ways that stories come to us, but they all are connected by the same idea, which is a good Hidden Brain story allows you to look at your own life with new perspective.
Well, and you mentioned astronauts. I think the more I read about the astronauts, the more I think they would make an incredible psychological study. I mean, here's this population of people that are like the new age explorers, and they go on these long duration flights. So have there been some kind of sociological studies of astronauts and people that want to be astronauts?
You know, I don't know specifically about the body of work looking at astronauts as a subject. I know that space agencies for sure have spent a lot of time studying the mental makeup of people who go into space, selecting who should go into space. I remember as a kid, I thought the only people you should send into space are the people who, you know, might have nothing to live for on Earth, because it's so risky to send someone up in space. So you don't want to send someone who's got a lot of stuff to live for here on Earth. That's how I thought when I was 9 years old.
Yeah, but and families and wife and kids and husband, right. And yeah.
Right. But of course, it turns out that's exactly the opposite, right? What you want to do is you want to send up people who have lots of incentive to want to come back, people who are willing to deal with all kinds of adversity, all kinds of struggle, and make it back alive, because you want that to be an important part of what constitutes an astronaut's mental makeup. There's also sort of the problems that we assume that people will deal with in space are often not the ones they actually experience. One of the problems, of course, in extended space flight is boredom. How do you deal with boredom for very, very long periods of time? How does it change the way you think? How does it change the way you interact with other people? And of course, once you come back to Earth, how does being in space change the way you relate to the people around you? I mean, this is true for any, you know, transformational experience that we have. When we come back to our daily lives, there's a sort of mismatch between this transformational experience we've had and the humdrum experience of our daily lives. And I'm sure that's true for astronauts as well.
Well, it sounds like there was a demand or an interest in having your show from your work on NPR. But I'm kind of curious if, you know, why you think that the show is as popular as it is. Just, is it the subjects? Is it the broad range of subjects or topics? I mean, are you surprised at how popular it is?
I am surprised by how popular it is, and I don't think I actually know the answer to your question. And in some ways, I think this is generally true for most people who are building things that work, which is I'm not sure they fully understand how it is that they have built what they have done. And I know there's sort of a whole genre of work that basically says, you know, you ask the expert to tell you what it is that he or she is doing, but much of the time, I'm not sure the expert actually fully understands what he or she is doing. And I don't want to call myself an expert, but to the extent that Hidden Brain has had any success, you know, certainly I think the ingredients that have gone into it, you know, there's been a lot of hard work, you know, there's a lot of excitement. I'm personally very enthusiastic about the things that I talk about. I think that enthusiasm comes through in what we're doing. We're interested in what happens to people's lives, and we're talking about things that are relevant to people. So that's an important part of it. But if you ask me why has it succeeded as a package, the answer is I really don't know.
Well, I mean, I think we got to chalk it up to, has anybody said your voice is just perfect for,
it really
you
is.
Have the perfect sociologist perfect. Voice. I mean, it's like direct, but yeah. Also subtle, but also, it's like, yeah. Has anybody ever told you that you have the perfect voice for this?
You know, a lot of people say they like my voice, and it's a source of intense embarrassment for me, to be honest with you.
Because,
I mean, anyone who has ever had their voice recorded and played back to them has the experience of saying, that's what I sound like? Really? And, you know, that's not how you think of your own voice sounding, because, of course, you hear your own voice differently.
That's a good point.
And as someone who has heard my voice for a very long time, I'm not sure I'm as enamored by it by a lot of people who've heard my voice a lot less.
Oh, well, Anna has no idea what that's like, because she's...
I do like your voice. Your voice is better, though. Like, I will just say, your voice is amazing. But I see what you're saying. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're like, I don't, you know, hearing my own voice as much as I do.
We were afraid you were going to psychoanalyze us, actually. We're trying to figure out how to tell you as little as possible about ourselves.
Right.
But
I will say that one thing that I've picked up in my interviews with guests is that, you know, you have an assumption about the people who are the really good talkers, right? I mean, the people who are really good talkers, and there's an image that you have, I think, as a layperson about who makes a good talker. And what I think I've discovered as a journalist is that the single most important ingredient of being a good talker is to be really, really passionate about what it is that you're talking about. And if you really care about what you're talking about and you are really enthusiastic about it and you see great wonder in what it is that you're talking about, then even if your sentences aren't complete and your accent isn't quite familiar, something about that enthusiasm, I think, gets transmitted to the listener. And you sort of share in that enthusiasm and that wonder. And I think when I think about the guests we've had on Hidden Brain, you know, many of the best guests have not necessarily been the people who are the best, you know, grammatically stringing together beautiful sentences and using the most perfect vocabulary. They're people who are genuinely just so in love with what it is that they're doing that enthusiasm and that passion comes through in what it is they're saying.
Yeah, I think that sums it up really well, and we can tell
He's
that you've
so
got
wise.
It. I know that's the other thing is I think it's like you come across as this like sage, you
it's
know.
True.
Also,
it's true.
And
nothing could be further from the truth. You know, I've often sort of said that Hidden Brain, in some ways, is a compendium of my various neuroses and failings as a human being, and part of the reason we have so much material for Hidden Brain is that apparently the length of my neuroses is very, it's vast. My neuroses are vast.
We've only scratched the surface.
That's right.
Well,
that's
indeed
good for the listeners, because I think they want to hear more. I think they want to hear this for a long time coming.
Well, thank you. That's very kind.
Well, Shankar, thanks so much for talking with us today. This has been a lot of fun. We've been speaking with Shankar Vedantam of NPR's Hidden Brain. Shankar, thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
It only takes a few minutes browsing social media to realize that everyone has an opinion or belief about all kinds of things. And since the observatory has been around since the mid-1800s, you could only imagine how many opinions and beliefs have been shared with us.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And we save all these correspondences, emails, letters, etc. And we lovingly call it the crank file. And Dean, you have one to share with us now, right?
Yes. So this is an old one, an oldie but a goodie.
When's it
from? This is a, well, there's no date, but it's some part of it is typewritten on
it's
a typewriter.
Not an email, so we know.
This is old school stuff. Mm-hmm. And it proposes a system change for our entire world. And the system changes suggested that we need to get rid of our base 10 number system. You know, where we go to 10s, 20s, 30s, 100s, 200s. They say we need to come up with a better system. And the better system is a base 8 system. Now, think about this. If everything was done in eights, you could divide things really well. Think of a pizza, and you have a pizza, and you have it 8 slices. Mm. You can divide that pizza.
Is there pizza?
Lots of different, yes, there is pizza.
Not right now.
No, but picture there's pizza here. And on that pizza, you'd slice it in 8 pieces.
Okay.
Think of how easy it is to divide that up. You could share it evenly between, well, one, you eat the whole pizza. Two people yes. get a half pizza. 4 people could get 2 slices each, and 8 people get 1 slice each.
Okay.
It's easier to divide something by an eights than it is tens.
But we have 10 fingers. So yeah. When you count, what do you want to do? Lop off a pinky?
Well, there we go. That's the problem.
Dark.
That's the problem. The change that it would take to do this would be ridiculous. You'd have to, I mean, and even the writer says it may take 2 or 3 generations for us to get used to the change of the base 8 system. And historically, this has actually come up a lot of times.
Okay.
We've had this discussion before. Is base 10 the workable solution? And not every civilization in the ancient world did this. I mean, you said it just right. We have a base 10 system because look at your hands.
Right.
You count on your fingers, 10 fingers. Now, if we go to ancient Babylon, they did not have a base 10 system. They used base
ancient Babylon.
12. That's right.
Okay.
So we're talking thousands of years ago. They had a base 12 system. So how did they count?
Wait, they had a base 12 system?
Yes.
Even higher. Not,
it's even,
okay.
Yeah, because 12 can be divided by 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. You can divide that up so many different ways.
Okay.
And 10, that's pretty lame. 1, 2, and 5. That's it. It's boring.
12, yeah, it kind of is boring.
12 is way better. Now, how do you count 12 when you only have 10 fingers? I always wanted to figure out how do they do it. And so somebody explained to me in ancient Babylon, look at your hands.
Okay.
And look at, take your left hand and look at your 4 fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And your 4 fingers, each of your fingers has 3 joints on it, right?
Right.
And so what they do is they take your thumb and you could take your thumb and touch each of the joints. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Okay.
That's how you'd count in ancient Babylon.
And so using your thumb.
Use your thumb as the counter and your 3 joints on your 4 fingers.
Okay.
And also, the plus of counting with one hand is then you have your other hand free to take money, to take goods, exchange goods, because otherwise you're counting with your fingers. You're dropping your stuff all over the place. It's so much better.
Wow.
Base 12. So I think we're going to try to figure out how to make a video and count to 12.
We should
be
kind of
cool to post it up there. Now, I know that sounds really weird.
It does sound weird.
But there are things that we have today that are non-base 10 stuff. Think of a clock.
And like a ruler?
Ruler, exactly. Okay. There's 12 inches in a foot.
Yeah.
Why is that? We've learned to live with that. We kind of know what a third of a foot is, and well, maybe. But think of a clock, too. Clock has 60 minutes in an hour. And then there's 12 hours in the morning, 12 hours at night, and 60 seconds in a minute. I mean, there's all these, and we have degrees, 360 degrees in a circle.
So he wants everything to be
He wants
eight?
Everything to be base 8.
That's,
so time
okay.
would be base 8. Distances would be base 8.
Huh.
But so it is kind of complicated.
It is complicated.
And where do we get these 60s and 12s? Thank you, ancient Babylonians. Isn't that weird, though, that, like, we're telling time
of it, actually, yeah.
Because of ancient Babylonians 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years ago. That's how they did it. And we're still doing it. But we don't question that, do we?
No.
Now, there's only one.
I mean, now I am, but
well,
no.
Now you are.
No.
But so the only time that this was, the most famous time where this was really challenged was in France, in revolutionary France, when the revolution happened. They tried to institute base 10 on everything.
They tried to do this, really?
They tried on all time. They tried on everything.
Uh-oh.
So every hour would have 100 minutes, and there would be 10 hours in a day instead of this weird 24 hours a day with 60 minutes. And people hated it so much. They fought against it so bad.
Is that what started the French Revolution?
They almost did a counter-revolution because all the people were like, nope, we're not doing this.
This is insane.
Nope. I like my 12 inches to a foot and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And so it got abandoned right away. And now we're stuck base 10.
And now here we are.
We have base 10. We have base 12. We have all sorts of different things.
There are
here.
So many bases.
And yet we're all used to it.
Yeah.
And no way am I going to change a doggummit. I'm sticking by the
right.
system.
Deal with it.
Sorry, person with the base 8. You're crazy.
Well, that wraps up this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Shankar Vedantam from NPR's Hidden Brain for joining us.
We'd like to hear from you. On social media, you can find us on Facebook. Just search Looking Up WVXU. And on Twitter, we're at Looking Up Podcast. You can also drop us an email at lookingup@wvxu.org.
We'd really love to hear from all our kid listeners. What's your favorite planet? Do you want to live on Mars? What would you ask Dean if you could? So send us an email or post on our Facebook or Twitter.
Remember to subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts and give us a rating and comment on iTunes. If you're new to Looking Up, you can always find all of our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y question mark, from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.